Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
It's Linda Clifford, Runaway Love on Curtum from 1978. Yeah, Curtis Mayfield's label. Number three, R&B, 76 pop, no surprise there. Former Miss New York State, and Gil Askey produced that for Curtum. Yeah, fine. Fine product of the disco era, as far as I'm concerned. It is Memorial Day, and we are talking around that topic. And as I mentioned, it is tough to return to civilian life after serving. And I don't care what shape you came out, it still can be a challenge. And putting yourself in a position to not only develop a life, but develop businesses can be tough. There is an organization that can help, the National Veteran Business Development Council. And Paul Mara, who is former active duty military, who was a military police investigator, yeah, he knows all, has been a serial entrepreneur since then, involved in starting up a number of businesses. And he joins us on WGN Radio. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Raleigh, and certainly appreciate the opportunity to be on your show today.
And I'm appreciate everything you do because, again, I think that it's such a challenge. As I was saying at the start of the show, yes, it's much better than the Vietnam era where veterans were being spat upon when they returned. But today, still, many of them are looked at as prey. Many of them are not helped. Some people just want to get their benefits and so forth. So to be able to navigate the landscape, hard enough emotionally, but logistically, organizations like yours become vital. So as a military police investigator, I'm sure you've seen it all. What are the biggest pitfalls that befall returning military men and women when they return to civilian life?
I think it's twofold. If they want to take the corporate route and get hired, what they find lacking is corporations do want to embrace veterans and bring them in, but what they find is it lacks the same camaraderie, the same excitement and things like that. And because veterans are only about 6% of the workforce, people don't really understand veterans and veterans' experience. They may have images of, you know, PTSD, traumatic brain injury, and things of that nature, so they don't understand it. And the camaraderie that you get being in the military and the service is quite different. So I think that's a challenge. If they do get a role in corporate America, it's a lot of the big corporations have employee resource groups of other veterans. That helps to bridge the gap. And really, in the corporate world, the biggest challenge is for the officer ranks, because officers are trained to be very broad and deep, you know, 3 years doing artillery, 3 years logistics. So when they come out of the military retiring, they go to corporate America for a job, and they pretty much show up, say, what do you need done, because I can do it. And literally, that's true. But that isn't how corporate works. The flip side is the entrepreneurial route, and for veterans, we're about 45% more likely to want to own and operate a business, and so for a lot of them, they look at that. I kind of kid when I talk about that to say we're sick of having somebody tell us what to do, so we want to be our own boss. So veterans really make great business owners because of the experience, the training, the discipline that you get from the military, the loyalty, the ability to do less with more, the ability to work under stress, you know, teamwork, all those types of things, find a way, make a way, which makes them great business owners. So there's about 2.5 million veteran-owned businesses in the country. So even though we're about 6% of the population, own somewhere between 10 to 15% of all businesses.
I would see that the entrepreneurial route for most, not all, obviously there's always exceptions, but most of the military makes so much sense because, like you say, the discipline and the logistical training that they receive makes them innately prepared to do something like this. I guess the real challenge would be in what area do they want to develop a business? You know, obviously they're probably not going to become an arms dealer, so, and they're probably not going to be waging war. So
no.
At least not in most suburbs. So sure. failing that, and you do see obviously military businesses of everything. I don't care if they're carpet cleaners or you know, on up to executive consultants. It can be anything, and I recognize that. But for somebody who is returning from the military who says, yeah, it would be nice to be my own boss. I would like to own a business. And like you say, there's a lot of resources to help them. The one thing that doesn't really exist is what's your passion? What can you do? So when you are advising people, what do you tell them when they really don't have a direction?
So the great question, having been a serial entrepreneur all my career with startup businesses, my counsel would be, first and foremost, if you can find a franchise business that does what you want or that you can be passionate about, they're 80 to 85% successful versus 5% for a startup. So if you want to play by the numbers, that's a pretty safe bet. Franchises also understand and appreciate veterans because veterans are great with systems, and that's what a franchise is. So the vast majority of franchises offer discounts and incentives for veterans just simply because they're used to working systems and they make very good franchise owners. So that'd be the first counsel. Secondarily, if a franchise isn't quite the right fit, perhaps an existing business, one that is established, they've proven the concept, they've got customers. Now, each of these has upsides and downsides, but then the last would be a startup. And there's a lot of new resources that have come about over the last 6 years, really, only for veterans who want to do that. And a great group that actually started out of Chicago is called Bunker Labs. And so they're a nonprofit incubator and accelerator for veteran-owned businesses. And after they launched, J.P. Morgan Chase, one of the big supporters, gave them, I think, something like $1.5 million to spread what they were doing in Chicago. So today, I think they're in about 27 cities all around the country, and that's a great resource for veterans who are looking at the entrepreneurial path and a startup. That's a great resource for them.
I think there are tremendous resources as far as that goes. Now, franchises are wonderful on many, many levels, and there are so many from which to choose. Most people think of fast food, but by no means is that even the tip of the iceberg when it comes to franchises. But for many people, franchises are cost prohibitive to get in. I mean, very few people are going to open the McDonald's franchise, for instance. We think, okay, well, we'll open Subway. They're the cheapest. We don't need to have the equipment or what have you. But in terms of that, what franchises are out there, or I should ask it another way, what resources are out there to the veteran to be able to do a franchise financially?
There are a number of national franchise companies that have coaches around the country that their job is to help guide someone through the path of franchise business ownership. In fact, I believe this week one of the groups, it's called the Entrepreneur Source, is doing a veteran-focused three-day lunch-and-learn type of thing talking about it. They also talk about the financing of it, and there are some specific funding programs for veterans through the SBA and their families that help them do that and fund it. So that can help. A big veteran-focused franchise that doesn't have that cost structure of a McDonald's is called J-Dog, and they're a junk removal company, and they've gone a long way there. Vast majority of them are veteran-owned and operated, so that's a great one as well. And then to your point earlier, the NVBDC, who I work on behalf of, did a survey of the veteran businesses they've certified, and the top 10 industries that they're in or the top industries that veteran businesses are in includes professional services, manufacturing, administrative and support, construction, transportation and warehousing, and wholesale trade. So just an example of the different areas. But as to your point earlier, you know, veterans pretty much are spread across all industries, like the general population is in terms of businesses as well. So they're in any and all, but they focus in those areas I just mentioned.
One of the things I see going back to organizations that tend to want to really capitalize on what veterans' benefits can give them is education. People are very often lured into educational opportunities that maybe are not going to amount to a hill of beans in terms of really starting or operating a business. And I'm sure your organization, the National Veteran Business Development Council, runs into this. How do you combat, I guess, the issue of veterans becoming prey to things that maybe aren't in their best interest?
Yeah, and that's been a problem for not only veterans but others, the for-profit ones that aren't there to really educate and give you the skills you need. And especially with veterans coming out with GI Bill benefits, which is what got me through college, so I'm very thankful for that as well, is because they have that and they try to appeal. And just be cautious like anything. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Make sure you do your due diligence and the research to check out the company, so that you make sure, or the institution, to make sure that it's legitimate. Ask to talk to some of the people who have been through it. You know, things of that nature. Just go in, eyes wide open. And I think veterans tend to be a cynical, skeptical crowd. I know because I'm one of them. I deal with them every day. So they tend to take a little bit more cynicism, skepticism to things, which is healthy in terms of trying to avoid those things.
I would think for many people coming out of the military, I won't say there's no need in that sense, but furthering education is not necessarily the ticket to financial independence and a business. I would assume that a good percentage of military could dive right into the work world on some fashion without furthering an education. Is that the case?
I would think most of the occupational specialties in the military aren't what everybody thinks. The front line, the tip of the spear, if you will, it's all the support that goes on. I think the last I heard was about 90% of the jobs in the military aren't what people think they are. You know, people in the foxholes and all those things. So the training that they get in the military to do all those jobs that have, in most cases, have a civilian equivalency, gives them great training and experience as part of the military. So depending on what occupation they want to go into, they may not need that. You know, the trades is really suffering with those that are in there now getting to the retirement age, but a lot of the younger people not going into it. So the military gives a lot of that training, the mechanics and the engineering and combat engineers and those things, that they have great skills. Construction's a big area for vets just because of that type of experience that they get.
Right, the experience and the physical prowess, the physical fitness that they obtained in the military as well. They can still do jobs of that nature. I'm hogging Paul, I'll admit that. And so if there's a veteran listening who has any questions whatsoever, this is a great time to ask somebody who knows what they're doing, as opposed to me. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number to call. I'm Raleigh James, filling in for G, and we will pick it up with Paul Mara and hopefully you in moments right here on WGN Radio. Donnie Elbert would have been 84 years old today, died in 1989, 52. That was out on Parkway in 1964, Run Little Girl. Bubbled under on the R&B chart, no notice on the pop. And I guess he's most known for his version of Where Did Our Love Go in 1971. But he'd been around since the 50s, prolific writer, and born in New Orleans, raised in Buffalo. Some beautiful ballads, too, very underrated. So that's Donnie Elbert. I'm Raleigh James, I'm filling in for G, and we are talking with Paul Mara. And he is with the National Veteran Business Development Council. And we've been talking about returning from military service, finding a way financially through civilian life, and of course starting your own business. I'm very pleased to hear that so many military vets are picking up on that because they're uniquely trained for it. There's a lot of opportunity, but one of the things, Paul, that I found interesting is how many, for instance, in contracts and things like that, advantages a veteran-owned business can have. And I believe it's organizations like yours that A, certify them, and B, let them know what's available.
And I agree with you. And about 5.5 years ago when I started becoming a business coach and advisor and wanting to help and work with veterans, the National Veteran Business Development Council was just getting off the ground as a nonprofit that certifies veteran-owned businesses to be able to do business with the Fortune 5000 companies as a diverse-owned business. So veterans are the new kid on the block, joining with women, minority, the LGBTQ+, and disabled-owned businesses as being able to have the same advantage those groups have had for decades. So what the NVBDC did was remove that barrier that kept veterans from working with corporate America, because corporations require each of those businesses to be certified by a third-party nonprofit every year to make sure they're legitimately owned, operated, and controlled. So what the NVBDC did was they opened the doors to corporate America, and we estimate it's about an $80 billion a year brand new opportunity for veterans. And so spent the last 5 years really educating veteran businesses, and there, like I said, there's 2.5 million of them. There's 14,000 that the VA has certified to do government work, yet the NVBDC is only at about 500 or 700. So there's much fewer veterans certified to work with corporate America, but corporate America buys a lot more than government does, somewhere between 5 to 10 times as much every year. And there's so few veterans that the opportunity is tremendous. And corporations have really responded very well to the NVBDC and welcoming veterans in their supply chain. There's about 90-plus corporations who now support and sponsor the NVBDC, and it's a major corporation. It's Microsoft, Apple, Google, Ford, General Motors, JP Morgan Chase, Medtronic, Abbott Labs, Royal Bank of Canada. It's a very impressive list. And all of these companies are demonstrating their interest in wanting to bring veterans in their supply chain and giving them the same opportunities these other groups have had for decades.
And it is exciting. It's also a big leg up, and it's something that I think is somewhat unknown to the average person, even the average vet, that it's not a case of just stating on the application, yeah, it's veteran-owned. Being certified is a key element in this, and until your organization came around, there was really no way to do that, was there?
That's correct. There wasn't. The Veterans Administration has a program called the CVE that was only for the VA and to do work with the government. And corporate America never embraced that because it wasn't the same standard they've required for decades. And so for all intents and purposes, even though that existed, there was no other private sector one until the NVBDC launched and really did a huge favor to the veterans to open this brave new world, as I call it, to them. To be able to get major procurement opportunities.
This is huge. Now, you say different standards for private versus government. What are the standards? Are there some very obvious things that businesses must do to be able to be included in this?
Yes, absolutely. So each diverse business, including veterans, every year has to be certified, and they have to be 51% or more owned, operated, and controlled by that diverse group. So in veterans, that case. And it can be more than one veteran that owns 51% or more. And so they do extensive due diligence and require a lot of the business documents and tax forms and resumes, and actually go to the point of doing an on-site assessment to make sure that it's a real person, that they're alive, it's a real business, that it fits the description of the business. So they make sure, because there's hundreds of billions of dollars corporations are providing through supplier diversity, and of course, wherever there's money, there's going to be fraud, which is why these certifying bodies exist, so that corporations know. For the veterans, the VA certification is every 3 years, whereas corporations require it every year, and the VA does not do the on-site assessments with all the certifications that corporations have required, which is why they never really embrace that as a standard.
Now, for the business that the military-owned business, a veteran-owned business, the fact there are so few compared to the population out there that truly is veteran owned. Is it a case that they are unaware of this?
Yes, absolutely. I'm doing three webinars this month, including one tomorrow morning, specifically for veterans focused on this space. And I'm dealing with very large veteran-owned businesses, you know, $90 million, $130 million, $150 million, who've been around for decades, but they've been doing nothing but government work because nobody educated in that there was another opportunity, another greener side of the pasture on the other side of the fence with corporate America. So as I do my outreach to veterans, which I do on a daily basis, they say, I never knew this opportunity ever existed. So they're very appreciative, and especially with the COVID situation where everybody's looking to pivot, that's why I really put a lot of effort in April and May to really reach out to not only diverse business but the others, because even the women and minority-owned businesses who've been doing this for 30 and 50 years, only 0.1% of those businesses are certified. So there's tremendous opportunities across all the diverse ones, but nobody lets them know that. You know, it's hard to get the word out to about 20 million diverse-owned businesses in the country about this opportunity, and that's why we spend a lot of our time on veteran business outreach.
I'm sure. By the way, let me first get to your webinar, because you're saying tomorrow morning. Tell me when and where.
Okay, it's 10 a.m. and Central Time, and there's an Eventbrite registration link that I have, and I did two other webinars this month. I will be continuing those because, like I said, we've got 14,000 veterans certified by the VA that we need to reach out to, and then there's about 30,000 total that are registered with the government as veteran-owned, but they just haven't been certified. A part of them are. So we have a very large audience to get the word out, and that's what we're reaching out to for the veterans. So we'll be doing ongoing webinars throughout.
Okay, so nvbdc.org will get you the information?
Well, that will get you to the certifying body for veterans. If someone is interested in the webinar tomorrow or the ongoing ones, best way to reach me is with info, the word INFO, at D as in David, S as in Sam, D as in David, C as in Charles, DSDC, info at DSDC.com. And that'll be an email, and I can send a link to the Eventbrite registration site or follow up with the other webinars we'll probably do in June.
All right, great. Info at dsdc.com. Now, one final question. I think for some people, they're saying, oh, well, this is going to cost me a lot of money, and it's going to be really hard, and it's not worth it to me. Obviously, in the end, I don't doubt that it's worth it. But what's the upfront cost of being certified?
Okay, it varies on the company's annual revenue, and that's all the certifying bodies base it on it. It's a low of $350 for an annual national certification if you're under $1 million in sales, and it's a high of $2,500 if you're $100 million or more. I will share one real-world example of a veteran who got certified, and shortly thereafter, BMW gave him a $7.8 million contract. So I don't think he was complaining much about his certification
fee. Right. And even without that, the numbers are certainly make it a no-brainer that anyone who is a vet and isn't certified should look at this. So nvbdc.org. And Paul Mara, thanks for joining us.
Well, Raleigh, I certainly appreciate, especially on this Memorial Day, to honor those who have fallen. And really appreciate that on behalf of veterans.
You betcha. And we appreciate what you're doing for them. It's a great organization. Thanks.